This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you very much. Thank you and welcome to the one talk show in America that helps you make better money moves. Lots on the agenda today. We're talking about IRAs and Roths. We didn't get to all of that stuff yesterday, so hopefully I'll get a chance to talk a little bit more about it. Johnny Dean is in the house. What are you going to talk about?
Well, you had mentioned something. I don't know if it was off the air or on the air, but something about required minimum distributions, more stuff on IRAs, all these things that I really find compelling.
Well,
I'd like to get into some of that if we can.
Flexible spending accounts. I've got something on that because you're going to want to know because we're running out of time. We'll talk about that as well. But I do want to start today with something that I think is really, really important. If I can only find it here. This is what happens when
in your stack of stuff.
You can't see this, folks, but all these papers and everything here, I have got a stack of them about a foot and a half high over here. And it's all my show prep. I refuse to throw away my show prep or shred it.
I know.
Because you never know.
You never know if you're going to need it. I know. I've known people like that.
But I do want to start with crash-proofing your retirement portfolio. Steve Vernon wrote a little bit about this. He's an actuary. Sit back, folks. Relax. It is a way to get some satisfaction. On the Ray Lucia Show! Yeah, here we go. So Vernon is one of my favorite actuaries.
That's never been spoken before. Those words have never been put together before. One of my favorite actuaries. Who has a favorite actuary?
I do. He's a good writer, and he's a brilliant actuary. Even though I don't always agree, you're never going to agree with everybody, especially people that come from academia who never got jelly on their sleeve or have a dog biting on their shoelaces sitting around the kitchen table helping people do their retirement planning.
Yes.
But what they do very well is they give us data and good information. So that is what I will share with you, what Mr. Steve Vernon, who writes for Forbes and I think CNN Money, I don't know, a bunch of different places.
Okay.
And he's a really, really smart guy. He says this: it's only natural that older workers and retirees would be anxious about the recent stock market volatility. Older workers may not be able to make up for losses in their investments before they retire. Both older workers and retirees might also think they don't have much time to ride out future stock market declines. Isn't it interesting how all of the discussions we have on retirement center around almost the same topic?
In other words, what if I retire or I'm about to retire and the market goes down, the market crashes, what am I going to do? I had reached my retirement number. It was 500,000, 700, a million, 200, whatever it was. And now that $1 million that I needed to retire just when I decide to hang it up is now worth 800,000 or some number less.
Yeah, and he gets into a couple of other things here that are also interesting because as an actuary, he says, folks, you're probably going to be retired for minimum of 20 years, but certainly could be significantly longer.
Well, that's what you got to plan for.
And it could be longer than that for all we know. We were talking yesterday about some of these medical breakthroughs and science and AI and all this stuff. Yeah. A-E-I-O and U, too. Another good band. Here's what he said. During the we were obsessed with music. I'm sorry, it's just
you
the
caught
way
that
we are.
One before I did. I was
U, too.
I missed that, yes.
During the 30-year period from 1987 to 2017, we experienced four major stock market crashes. What does that mean? That means if you are on the precipice of retirement or already retired or within 5 or 10 years of retirement, you are likely to experience four market crashes. How you react to them may define success for you in retirement.
And reacting doesn't mean figuring when to get out just before the market went down.
You're not capable of doing that?
I could get lucky. I might. I mean, I got lucky once on my refi that I just happened to time it perfectly at the lowest possible interest rate.
See, now, one could argue I got lucky four times, but no. We won't go there. Let's talk about the crashes.
Let's talk about the crashes and not your...
1987, we all remember that one.
That was a quick 1 month. Well, it was a one-day thing, but it lasted about a month.
But if you reacted to the largest point drop, I think it was back then and still is in history.
The largest percentage, yeah.
If you reacted to that humongous drop and sold out, boy, you paid a dear price, because that 87 crash pretty much launched one of the great bull markets in history.
Yeah, from 88 all the way through 2000, really.
Well, interestingly enough, 1987, if you were an investor in January,
was
an up year for the market. You had gained so much. Yeah. It's only if you invested just before the crash and then got out.
It came back pretty quickly, too.
It very much did. Then you had the S&L crisis, which lasted from like the mid-1980s to almost the mid-1990s.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was trying times back then.
Well, you had some really, I think, some bad people up top. Gee, there's something weird.
Then you had the tech bubble bursting in March of 2000, and the Great Recession, which we've been talking about all day, mm-hmm. from late 2007 to early 2009. So four pretty major stock market events that could have either chased you out of the market or caused your portfolio under some kind of a systematic withdrawal to suffer dramatically.
Well, and that, of course, is a 30-year period that doesn't include the end of 2018 either. So that could have been five if you wanted to throw that in there.
I don't know that would be defined as a crash, especially in retrospect, but on an annualized basis.
I think it was big enough to scare a lot of people into doing whatever they would have done in 87 and in 2000 and all that.
So I guess what Vernon is talking about here in an article that he wrote for Forbes, protect your retirement against stock market crashes. The question has to be asked, have you done that? Have you protected your retirement against stock market crashes? I know you have, John, because you're still a ways away. What are you, 10 years away from retiring?
If all goes to plan, yeah. It may be longer, but minimum 10 years.
So
yeah.
A minimum of 10 years. So from your perspective, and I've got a calculator here somewhere, but from your perspective, if I were rendering advice to you, would I say, since you've got 10 or 15 years before you're going to retire, you're okay being super aggressive and having all your money in the market?
I still am.
Okay.
You might argue that it's time to look at maybe softening that stance, but...
I would argue that it's time
to
make some adjustments, but I would need to know more about your particular situation. For example, do you have access? Will you have access to a whole lot of home equity, equity in your home at some point, because I'm going to make the assumption that 3.25% or whatever interest rate that I talked you into a few years back.
You talked me into it at 3.75.
3.75.
I put it off.
You procrastinated.
And it worked in my favor.
That's called strategic procrastination.
That's exactly. There's a name for it. Yes. Okay. So yes, but with that, yes, the home has been paid down more than it was. Home prices have gone up, so there's quite a bit of equity there. I've owned it for 20 plus years.
Okay, but your mortgage is still $2,200 or $50,000 a year, whatever it is. I don't know what it is.
It's some number.
But whatever it is, it's still going to be around 10, 15 years from now.
Yes.
And we'd want to make sure that you could tap into that to be able to take advantage of some known quantities in retirement planning, like postponing Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if it's 15 years from now, you may not be
able
to
15 years from now, that's as far as you can postpone.
But if you retired, say, at 65, 10 years from now, postponing John's Social Security is one way for him to make sure that he has annuitized income, both for you and for your wife.
Which is what Social Security is. It is a form of annuitized income. When you say annuitized, people get a little wiggy. What do you mean you're selling me an annuity? Well, annuity is annuitized income. Social Security is annuitized income. Pensions are annuitized often.
All right, so that doesn't necessarily mean you're crash proof.
No, and there's a difference.
And when we come back, we will finish our discussion on how to cash proof Johnny's retirement portfolio.
Not cash proof.
Oh, did I say?
Yes.
Did I say cash?
Crash proof. But there is some cash in there.
It's a Freudian slip.
I suppose so.
I'm going to cash proof John's retirement because I'm going to go into his bank account and take all his cash.
Good
Stick
luck.
Around. It's the Ray Program. Hey, welcome back, folks. This is the show that's kind of like a rubber ball. We keep coming back. We bounce back every single time. Right
Follow
after
the
break.
Bouncing ball. That's right. Every time.
I'm helping Johnny Dean and others, and a lot of this, you know, it's facetious. We're making
all the numbers up.
But I think it's really important because some of the things that you are doing right now, and you asked me about this, would I modify based on where you are?
Yeah, I'm 10 years out from retirement.
So you're 10 years out from retirement, and here's what I've learned during the break. First off, Johnny Dean has home equity, and that home equity could be turned into a reverse mortgage, have the home paid for so he doesn't have his mortgage payment, and it may even give him a line of credit where he can tap into that money and postpone having to take his wife's Social Security benefits, which should be pretty good. I also learned that your wife, Chris, has a couple of pensions or whatever that's mm-hmm. also going to be pretty good. So you've got some decent guaranteed income.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I'm giving him an A+. Now, we get to his investment portfolio, and I learned that John Dean is 100% invested in the stock market and does not have alternative income sources other than the Social Security and the pensions, correct?
Yes, it's the four, and mainly it's the 401k, a little more diversified in my Roth, but the Roth I'm not doing much with, and the 403b. 403b is pretty good. It's the 401k that I've had aggressive growth for quite a while.
And certainly has paid off handsomely in the last 10 years. Now, we started out the program talking about crash-proofing one's retirement. So one of the things I would want to make sure of is on the day you retire, John, you have enough safe money to carry you through the rough times, because that crash could happen 2 days before you retire.
Knowing my luck, it will.
So here would be my advice to you. My advice to you is be on the hunt at some point between now and retirement date for an alternative income source. You and I talked extensively off the air about this yesterday.
Yeah, we did. Yes,
because you and I both invested in some alternative income sources.
Mm-hmm. We sure did.
Years ago, that particular vehicle sold, and we both made a nice, handsome profit.
Paid off very nicely.
But while we owned it, it also paid us a juicy yield.
Had a nice income every quarter, four
it
times a
year. It was real
year.
Estate, by the way, so we're not talking about some,
no,
you know,
no,
whiz
no,
bang.
No, no,
It was a real estate investment. Okay, so I would be on the lookout for that over the next 10 years because I'd like to convert some of that stock market money to a non-correlating income type investment.
It would have to mainly be in our qualified plan, our 401k, 403b, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay.
But at age 59 and a half, you could actually take an in-service withdrawal, set up an IRA, and one of our topics, by the way, is buying real estate in an IRA, and that's coming up in just a bit.
That's what we were going to talk
about.
Yes.
So we'll get to that. That's our next segment's topic. This one here is me rescuing you from you.
Rescuing me from me?
Yeah.
Do I need to be rescued?
Aretha,
I didn't know I was in danger.
Aretha will rescue you.
Yeah.
Listen, I think that what you should do is begin to pare back on the equity allocation. Here's what I have learned in many, many years of researching this stuff, and I can get you the research on it. Starting at your retirement date, you want to have phased down the allocation to equities because of something you know very well, the sequence of returns risk early in retirement.
Sure.
So if you can start your retirement with about 35% allocated to volatility, stocks, right? And maybe 25% or so allocated to other income investing that's not correlated to stocks, and the rest of your money allocated to something super safe that you can draw from in the early years of retirement in the event that you get stuck with some black swan bear market, then you could, by spending down the safe money, actually increase. I know this is so counterintuitive, but it's also true. Increase your allocation to equities marginally every year throughout retirement. And you don't have to do anything to do that.
Because I just take an income.
You take your income, but remember, if in fact you are spending from your safe account first, the percentage allocated to equities automatically goes up, doesn't it?
Of course it does.
And what we have learned is starting your retirement with a low allocation to equities, 30 to 40%, and increasing it incrementally every year over the next, 10, 15 years of retirement actually produces a better result than the exact opposite, which is what everybody's been trained to do, which is reduce your equities as you age.
The old goes back to the 100 minus your age, so that by the time you're 90, you're only 10% in stocks.
And there's academic support for that. I can't remember the article and the study.
What, for taking allocation all the way down?
Yeah, it has to do with the retirement glide path, the stock glide path, which you've written about, actually, haven't you?
Well, I have, and I'm still writing about something that we're going to send some stuff out to subscribers here in the next week or two. Yes, I am. But, what we're talking about is on the way to retirement. It's the change that has to happen on your way out of retirement. I mean, through retirement.
Yeah, because you have two kids, and you're going to have grandkids, hopefully soon, sooner rather than later.
I have no idea.
Well, so you got to get married first, okay? First comes love.
That's
then
like
comes
just
marriage.
A few months away. You realize
that. And then comes
the baby in the baby carriage.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're probably a year and a half, 2 years away from having a grandkid.
I don't. That's anathema to me. But yes, go on.
So you're going to want to have a legacy, some legacy left behind as well. So from the standpoint of crash-proofing one's retirement, it's also crash-proofing the legacy aspects because, obviously, you don't want to spend your last dollar.
No.
You want to have some money left over. Now, if you follow the traditional 4% rules, one of two things could happen. One is you could run out of money, but it's more likely than not you'd not be spending enough money because the markets typically, I think it's 95, 96% of the time, you're going to have more money left over at the end of 30 years mm-hmm. than what you started with. So for me, this is why I think it's really important to sit down at some point with a financial advisor that can design a plan that gives you the security that you need, that gives you a withdrawal amount that perhaps might be better than a 4% withdrawal strategy, but also gives you a greater legacy. Now, you'll remember because it was probably a couple of weeks ago, I talked about the FAL study using actuarial science.
Mm-hmm.
You should review that with Chris because that's what you should be doing, in my opinion. Crash-proofing your retirement, but yet still leaving some money on the table for the kids.
And not leave so much money that I'm depriving myself because the money's mine.
But when you have grandkids, I'll bet your attitude changes.
That's what I'm told.
We'll be back. Don't go away.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans.
Hey, welcome back, folks. This is the Real Chiz Show. Johnny is in the house. Johnny B. Good is in the house.
Yeah, what an innovative guitar.
Johnny B. Dean.
Yeah, I know somebody whose last name is, you and I both know somebody whose last name is Good. You remember that?
And they G-O-O-D-E.
Yes, and all of their kids, they gave them the middle initial B. I don't know if they were named one of them, you know, John or Johnny, but that's absolutely the, yeah. You know, you may know who I'm talking about.
I think I do.
Yes.
Okay, so we're talking about crash-proofing your retirement. And one of the things that we discovered with Mr. Dean, who I'm helping out here, is the, and I don't have to help him out because he's listening to me for 30 years.
We're so
role-playing
here
a little bit.
Yeah, all right.
So the fact though is when you have a retirement date 10 years out, now is the best time to start planning for the ultimate retirement. Because if you keep doing what you're doing, more than likely you're going to get lulled to thinking that, you know, what I'm doing is fine, especially if you are doing fine. And then as you get closer and closer to retirement, if you experience some kind of a market crash. Now, remember what I said. I don't know when I said it. But in the 10-year period ending December 31, 2009, stocks for 10 years produced a less than 0% rate of return.
That's without dividends, I think, right?
Nope, even with dividends.
Oh, even with dividends?
It was pretty flat. It was like minus 1%.
Oh, I didn't know it was in the negative. All right. Okay.
So I'm pretty sure of that. We'll have to look it up.
Well, whatever. But either way, it's flat.
So the fact is we want to start planning to pare back on stocks 10 years prior. It doesn't mean go to cash or anything like that. But over time, like a target date fund. Now, I've been very critical of target date funds. But they're actually on the right track heading into retirement. They're totally on the wrong track after retirement. So we start to pare back. One of the things that I also mentioned to John is it would be nice for him to have some non-correlated income in his retirement plan. And he says to me, yes, but all of my money is...
It's all in the 401k, for the stock portion, 401k, 403b. That's where the vast majority of the stock money is in those.
Okay. So, and that's fine, but now what I'm thinking about talking to you about here, Mr. John, is when you are 59 and a half, you will be able to go to your employer or your wife's employer mm-hmm. and yank some money out so that you could buy some real estate.
And by the way, at age 59 and a half, there's no penalty.
There's no penalty for doing what is called an in-service rollover. In fact, if a company would allow you to do an in-service rollover, which if you're 55 and you sever employment, you can actually do that right now. But that's a whole other topic. So John goes to his employer, or Chris, his wife, goes to the employer and says, I want to take $100,000 out and roll it over tax-free into an IRA. And my IRA is now going to purchase a rental property. Now the red flags start to go up because you've got to be very, very careful. First and foremost, you'll need to make sure that the document, the IRA custodian's document, allows you to do this. It'll have to be a self-directed IRA, and it's not going to cost $10 a year.
No.
It's going to cost you probably a couple $100 a year. All right? Now, the other thing you're going to have to know is you cannot self-deal. There are what are called prohibited transactions. So if you bought a rental property and decided that your grandchild needed a real home to live in, and you said, well, no problem, you guys can move in, that is a prohibited transaction. The way I read about it once upon a time was this. We're sitting at this desk, and you and I are side by side, okay? If the other side of the desk is the other side of the transaction, and we're on both sides of it, that's a prohibited transaction.
That's exactly what it is. That's a good visual.
You can't be on both ends, and that includes with your kids.
Of course.
You can't say, this would be kind of a joke, but you can't say, at least for me, I don't know about you, I'm a handyman. I'll put some sweat equity into that rental property. That is a prohibited transaction. You shouldn't do anything. You should hire the electrician, hire the contractor. You shouldn't do anything as it relates to that property. You can't move into it. Your kids can't move into it. There are restrictions. But since that's the only place you have $100,000 and we want to get some exposure to a non-correlating asset, it still can be beneficial. Now, you'll give up some important tax benefits.
Again, this is because you're saying all this because it's in an IRA.
Yes.
And I was going to ask you why in an IRA, but let's continue this.
Yeah, I will give you a better way to do it in a second. But the fact is,
yes. All right.
If all your money is in an IRA, you're not going to take a distribution, pay taxes, et cetera, et cetera. You'd rather buy it inside the IRA, have it appreciate inside the IRA, use other people's money to pay down the debt inside the IRA, and make a reasonable rate of return and have a reasonable income investment in your IRA.
Now, you said I lose some important benefits of because it is in the IRA.
Yeah, let me give you an example of something you could do so that it wasn't in the IRA. Let's use your wife's 403B plan.
Okay.
And let's assume you could buy a rental property with $50,000 down. She could go to her rental property, or you could go to your existing home and borrow the money out of your home. Because if you borrow the money out of your home, you could always pay it back when you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
If she borrows it out of her 403B plan, she must pay it back over five years. So the payment might be a little stiff for a while. If you do a home equity loan, you could do a line of credit and just pay interest only.
Mm-hmm. Now, for a while.
So you take your $50,000 out of your home or out of somewhere. And if it's interest only, it's going to cost you a couple hundred bucks a month. You take that $50,000, you put it down on a $250,000 place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you owe $200,000 on a mortgage.
May I ask? I am owning it personally now.
You now own it personally.
Instead of the IRA.
Instead of the IRA, yes. Which I prefer. And you will prefer too.
I sure do.
So now you've got, you know, costs of $1,800 a month all in, and you got rents of $2,500. I'm making these numbers up.
Whatever.
So you're bringing in $10,000 a year on your $250,000 house. That's a 4% cap rate. I'd want more, but let's just pretend that that's what you're getting. So now I've got $10,000 of income, and I've got other people's money paying down my mortgage, and I've got a depreciation allowance. My depreciation might be another $10,000 a year, maybe a little less than that, maybe $8,000 a year, because you can't depreciate land,
yeah.
Right? So that $8,000 could save me another $2,000 in taxes. That's a pretty good deal. That's an extra $2,000 to your already 4% rate of return, right?
And that pays my home equity, by the way.
And it pays for your home equity, which is not deductible
credit.
Anymore, except that I could make it deductible by tracing it over to the rental property.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes from a Schedule A to a Schedule E, but we're not talking about that stuff, technical stuff, all right?
No. All right, go on.
So now I've got the depreciation allowances to offset any positive income, so that income that you get is going to be tax-free, mm-hmm. because your depreciation is going to offset it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll be able to take an additional write-off depending on what your income is. All right, because if you make too much money.
So if you make over, is it 150, I think?
150, it's cut off. It phases from 100 to 150.
Is that married or single? Does it matter?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, okay.
All right? It doesn't matter.
All right, but anyway.
So now I've got depreciation. Now, unlike if you own the property inside your IRA, if you said, you know what, Carla got married, I got a grandkid, I bought a place in Las Vegas, it's not too far from her business, let's go ahead and just have her move in. So you can now rent it out to your daughter,
mm-hmm.
son-in-law, and baby, grandbaby.
Perfectly, there's
totally,
no step transaction
totally
because
legit.
Yes, because you're not buying it. The IRA is not buying it. I own it.
There's another thing you could do that you couldn't do if it ruined your IRA. You might say, we won the lottery. Or we just received a really big inheritance from Ma and Pa. So what we're going to do is we're going to gift that house to the kids and the grandkid. You can't do that with real estate in your IRA. So this is why strategy always pays off. So for you, there's a way for you to get non-correlating income assets and some tax benefits all at the same time and not put the real estate in your IRA.
What a strategy.
All right, we'll take a break and come back, and we will get the emails because we blew last hour's
email. We'll do at least one per show. Okay. That's what we got to do.
All right, we'll be back.
Attention all authors. Page
Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show, helping you to make better money moves. We were talking about real estate in your IRA. Before we get to emails, John Dean wants to tell you about Lynn.
Lynn, I meant to mention Lynn like an hour ago, and it's
yes.
My fault. Lynn Rowe, whom you hear on this program. I think she'll be on later in this week. You might have heard her today, but she wasn't able to make it in. But you'll hear her later on. Lynn takes care of different insurance needs for people, long-term care very often. You can talk to her. Long-term care is kind of her specialty. She's got a website. You can, and she's bringing us this segment of the program. I want my LTC.net. LTC, meaning long-term care. I want my LTC.net. Or you can give her a call. She might even answer the phone today. 877-270-3127.
And we thank her for sponsoring the program.
Well, absolutely. That's what we do.
Very quickly, though, I want to bring up one other negative on owning the real estate inside your IRA. It's doable. A lot of people do it. I'd like to figure out a way not to. And sometimes if you debt finance, and who's going to buy a piece of real estate in California, for example, for all cash? So usually there's a loan involved. That loan ain't going to be a 3.25% mortgage like yours.
No, it's not.
It's going to be more like a hard money loan because the loan's going to be based on the credibility of the real estate, not your, you know, financial statement.
You might be great financial, but it doesn't matter. You don't own it. The IRA would.
So you're going to pay a little bit more, higher interest rate on the debt. And then to the extent that you make money, the amount of money you make on that property attributable to the debt will be taxed to your IRA. This is why I jumped through all kinds of hoops to try to figure out how you should buy the property personally, even if you have to use your IRA money to pay the mortgage off or the personal loan or whatever you did for the down payment. And you can do that even if you're under 59.5. I've talked about doing 72T elections and all of that. So you just got to be very careful. And then the other thing is make sure that this IRA is separate unto itself and there's ample money in it to pay the property taxes, to pay the property manager. Oh, did we mention how important a property manager is? Critical.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So because you can't take money out of your own pocket and pay for other expenses. So make sure that the IRA that you set up has an ample supply of cash in the event the roof leaks and you need to hire a roofer to go fix it. All right, that's why. Now it's time for some emails.
Now
you
it's
got
time.
Mail.
We haven't really talked about annuities at all today, have we?
Well, with Lynn Rowe, we would talk about them.
Right. Well, we had a question from it may have been yesterday, and I apologize to Angel for not getting to this particular email, who says, why is it that an annuity for me is more costly than an annuity for my husband? We're both age 69.
Well, Earth Angel, whenever I hear that, you don't like that song?
No, I don't like that song.
I grew up with that song.
I know. Have memories. I don't have memories of it.
Kid.
Other than hearing it on the radio, and
yeah,
I just hate
okay,
it.
Angel, you are a female. You will live longer than your husband. Therefore, the insurance company is going to give you a worse deal. But let me give you some good news. You buy the annuity on you and then take out a life insurance policy on him because he's going to die before you. Bada-bing.
Age 69, not going to be cheap.
No, it's not going to be cheap, but you won't have to pay it for as long. Just kidding.
If it's that imminent, he probably wouldn't even get insured.
Just kidding.
Yes, I know.
Having a little fun. Use a little actuarial science here on the show.
Actuarial humor. I thought that was pretty good. All right. Let's see. These all come in willy-nilly here. Jane, should I focus on saving for my retirement or paying off my mortgage? I owe $180,000 at 3.875, which is 3 7/8%. I have an extra $1,000 per month to spend. My loan has 19 years left. There's some other notes on here that she had included. Payment is $13,000 a year.
Don't worry about that. Right. Let's just talk in general terms. All right, so she's got $1,000 a month, and she's got a mortgage interest rate, which she probably doesn't even get the deduction on anyway, but it's under 4%. Jane, that's a heck of a loan. So there's 19 years left. Now, granted, if you put $1,000 a month toward your mortgage, you'll get that sucker paid off a lot sooner. There's no question about it. But I don't think I would recommend that you do that. I would take my chances that dollar cost averaging $1,000 a month, either into the market or paying off other non-deductible debt, high interest rate debt, is going to pan out much better for you. This also reminds me of some of the topics we've had in the past from people that say, should I pay for my kids' college, put money in a 529 plan or pay off my home or put money in a 401k plan? And that's the other thing. If you've got room in your 401k, then I would definitely do that because I get a tax deduction. You're not going to get the deduction on the mortgage more than likely. If you're married, you got $24,000 off the top. A lot of people are ticked off about that, but that's just the way it is. But if you put $1,000 a month into your 401k plan, you're going to save, I don't know, probably $200 and some odd a month in income taxes. That, to me, would make a lot more sense than paying off the mortgage early.
Yeah, you know, we hear from a lot of the get-out-of-debt people about that's your biggest debt, and they show you all the interest you're going to be paying over the course of 30 years or 20 years, and look, you bought a home for $200,000, you're going to be paying $400,000 or something in interest over the course of those. Why not pay it off early? And oftentimes, it can make sense at certain times of your life, but there are other times of your life, people are in certain situations where that just doesn't make any sense at all. They've been told, and I know some people who've been told, oh, you got an extra $500 a month? Forget the 401k. Put it towards your mortgage.
I've actually heard that, and it's unconscionable. That advice from financial people.
Right.
But that advice is usually not good advice. Listen, I would make the assumption that Jane is more than 10 years away from her. If she owes for 19 more years in her home, she probably is 19 or more years away from retirement. That should be ample time for dollar cost averaging of $1,000 a month. So let me just do that real quick. If I've got $12,000 a year in payments for 19 years and she can get 6% on her money, that's $405,000 extra for your retirement. And if that was in the 401k plan, you would have gotten a nice write-off to put that money away. So I think the answer is definitely invest and don't pay off the house.
That's it. Thank you, Jane, for the email.
We're out of time. We thank you all very, very much. Now go out and make it a fantastic day. God bless you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information, answering questions about your biggest financial challenges, talking about your money, your business, and your life. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of this station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions. Ray is available.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for